Hello everyone and welcome to another video here on the Cycling Dane. And today we're doing another one of our World Tour previews. It's one of the big ones, one of the monuments, the first one of the calendar, Milano San Remo, the 114th edition of the race, La Primavera, as we also call it. Today I'm joined by Aldo creator Patrick, or more importantly, one third of the Echelon Cycling podcast. And yeah, Patrick, you're looking forward to Milan San Remo in 2023.
I love Milano San Remo. I actually, it is my favorite race of the season, funnily enough. I think it's just fantastic. There's very few races in the season where it's so unpredictable. You can go into a lot of the monuments sometimes and there are specified favorites, but I think Milano San Remo has that lottery aspect where it's always up in the air and it can sometimes produce some underdog winners. We've seen that in the last two editions. I think I'd consider Mohoric and Stuyven more underdogs in comparison to some of the bigger names that arrive here, and that's why I love this race so much. It's always you can throw 15 people's names into the hat, and honestly, any one of them could win. And that's why I love it. It's always just so much tension going right down to the wire. And I think that the Poggio is just such a great kind of amphitheater to top it off. You just have to go through 5 hours of snoozing to get there.
I mean, we could discuss the route as well, but we kind of all know the Sapressa, the Poggio. But yeah, I completely agree. It's the openness of this race. It's not hard. It's not a Paris-Roubaix. It's not a Tour of Flanders. It's, yeah, just the snooze fest for 5 hours. And then we get the really exciting crunch time, if you will. But before we go into the favorites, which ways can you win Milan San Remo, in your opinion?
I think that last year set a bit of a precedent. I think that UAE seemed pretty keen for Pogačar to try and make the race as hard as possible from far out, and that's going to make the Sapressa, I think, more of a focus point in the years to come. I think that it's going to see a more and more attritional race on the Sapressa and a smaller group going into the Poggio. It's really gone are the days of the sprinters doing well in this race. I think that UAE are going to drill it, and I think that if they get help from another team like Jumbo, it could see a really attritional race going into the base of the Poggio, maybe 20 riders. You could attack solo like Nibali up the Poggio and get away that way, but that hasn't been done in a while. You can have a small group like we saw in 2017 or 2019, which were the editions won by Kwiatkowski and Alaphilippe respectively, or you can get away solo at the base of the Poggio, like descent of the Poggio, so like Stuyven did, or you can break away on the actual descent of the Poggio, like Mohoric has done. So there's a whole plethora of ways that you can try and win this race. You don't really win it on the Sapressa; it's too far away from the finish. But there's quite a lot of different ways where you can use the Sapressa to then open up your advantage later on around the Poggio, but pretty much.
Yeah, that's very true. And that's what makes it so exciting. But well, looking at the favorites, we spoke about Tadej Pogačar over on the Echelon Cycling Podcast, episode 7. Check it out. Well, we could even start with Matej Morohić, but I'm going to start with Mathieu van der Poel because you said something to me before we started recording. And we saw him in Tirreno Adriatico not winning, but doing a lead out for Jasper Philipsen, who took two stages, I think, in total. And yeah, why is Mathieu van der Poel so intriguing on this one? He's intriguing on every race almost.
Yeah, I think I saw an interview. I can't remember which channel it was on, but Van der Poel was being interviewed about it was on stage seven, and after he'd led out Philipsen for the win, and he was being asked about San Remo, and he said that San Remo is a big target for him, which I found really interesting because of course we saw him not firing on all cylinders at Strade Bianche, which was quite surprising to a lot of people. Including me. And then Tirreno, of course, he's been a lead out man, which I think he did a really good job of. But clearly, this is all just a bit of tune up for San Remo. But given that his performances at Tirreno weren't great, especially on a lot of the puncture stages, which I think a lot of people were expecting him to do well on, for stages 4 and 6, which were both won by Roglic, it does open up some questions as to what kind of form Van der Poel is in, to be honest, because he's only got a week to Tim. Well, not even a week, it's Monday that we're recording this on. The race is on Saturday, so he's got, a week, a bit less than a week to really turn this round. Of course, it's not like a really aggressive and attritional race, like we've said about Flanders and Roubaix. You just have to survive until the base of the Sapressa, and then you pretty much don't. I make it sound so easy, but you just then got to do two hard efforts. You just got to go up the Sapressa and then the Poggio, and then you got to win. It's just as simple as that. Why can't everybody do it? I don't get it. But I think Van der Poel's got the capabilities of winning this race. The fact that he didn't do well at Tirreno, yes, I think it dents my optimism that he's going to do well, but he's still a favorite. He's still King Matthew, let's face it. Like he can really pull some shit off when his back's against the wall.
He is flying under the radar as well, in a way, because is he just doing this to be nice to Jasper Philipsen and then keeping under the radar, and then bang, he hits the Poggio and then descends down like a Sean Kelly. He finished on the podium last year with, crucially, last year it was a very different picture from him because he was coming from a really bad cyclocross season where he had numerous injuries now and again. I think he only finished two races, but nevertheless, here he has already done Tirreno-Adriatico, Strade Bianche, so he's already in the road cycling mindset or whatever. Not that he needs it, but yeah. So who knows? Like, we're all only speculating about this, but like, if you can finish third coming off an injury and with no real racing going into it, I wouldn't suspect being the world champion now again in cyclocross, and then having Strade Bianche where he disappointed. And then having this tune-up race of Tirreno-Adriatico where he didn't really commit fully but did exert some effort, potentially this could be the blueprint for him to win another monument to add to his collection. But
Well, that would fit in nicely to your 2023 preview predictions that you did at the beginning of the year, where you said that Van der Poel's going to be winning a lot of races, San Remo being one of them. So maybe the stars will align for you.
talking about cyclocross riders, we could put in Wout Van Aert and Pidcock here as well. They had a bit of an altercation at Tirreno-Adriatico. And do you think that crash has tarnished, no, not tarnished, but like potentially affected Pidcock's chances of winning? We've spoken about him potentially being a favorite as well. I think that was last week. We spoke about him being potentially a favorite for Milan San Remo. But yeah, what do you think? We know he's awesome at descending.
I think it depends because I think, or alongside that crash on stage four, where him and Wout van Aert had a bit of a bunny coming together, he also crashed on stage seven, did Pidcock, which meant that he DNF'd stage seven. I can't remember what his injury was specifically. I think it might have been a wrist or hand thing. So whether he starts San Remo, I guess, is still up for debate. That is pure speculation. That is not backed up by anything. There are no sources which are saying what Pidcock's is or is not doing before anybody goes and types in the comments that I'm talking. Pure speculation. So I think that Pidcock has the capabilities of somebody who could win this race. Kind of similar to Mohoric, getting away on the descent. He'd probably not be fast enough to beat some of the other pure sprinters who we'll be talking about. Next, he won't be beating those guys in a pure sprint. He's got to get away on the descent, but that's happened before with Mohoric last year. So therefore, can Pidcock do that? Then yeah, absolutely. Because everybody knew that Mohoric is really good at descending last year. Nothing really changed in his descending ability going into last year, but he still got away. It's like it was fully broadcasted, but people couldn't stop it from happening. And people know that Pidcock's a really good descender. We've seen that multiple times. Would they be able to stop him on a descent attack? I don't really think so. It's not really a physical capability. It's just a matter of how freaking ballsy you are, pretty much, isn't it? So I think that Pidcock, if he starts, considering that he won Strade Bianche, and we've seen the correlation between winners of Strade and winners of San Remo, it's a strong correlation, and Pidcock should certainly be considered one of the favourites if he lines up. Depends what his injury's like.
I mean, yeah, while we're not putting too much faith in his basket, despite him being a former champion, but it's just he doesn't seem great, to be honest.
I don't know what it is about Wout van Aert, because I don't know. It's that classic thing, what's it called? People say Wout van choke or whatever. For some reason, in these big on the big stage, he can't quite execute a bunch sprint or a, not a bunch sprint, but a reduced sprint. And nobody can quite put their finger as to why this is, because he is a very good sprinter. We've seen that lots of times in the Tour de France. He's won bunch sprints in the Tour, and so
Champs-Élysées.
it, yeah, exactly. So why he doesn't win these reduced sprints really just beggars belief. I don't really get it. I mean, what do you think it is? Like, will he stand a better chance if because Laporte's looking good? Could him and Laporte do
Yeah,
quite a
I was
good
gonna
thing?
say that. I mean, they are bringing a strong team, Attila Valter as well. Messed up in Strada. They really should have won that. Sorry, Pidcock, but we all know it's true. But yeah, Laporte is such a, like, I think he was one of the signings of last year. He's
Yeah,
like
absolutely.
night and day. The Cofidis Laporte couldn't win anything. And then Jumbo Laporte, he's world beater.
Yeah, he's so deadly, isn't he? If they can get both of them over the top of the Poggio, I
Oh.
think that it could be quite deadly. It's worth noting that I think there's going to be, well, I looked at the BBC weather forecast, and well, the BBC is not very great good at predicting the weather in the UK, let alone in San Remo, but
Yeah,
it says
true.
that it's going to be a seven and like an 18 mile an hour northeast wind, which is going to be a crosswind on that open section where people usually attack. So if somebody attacks there, it's going to be really strung out. And if somebody loses the wheel, then it's going to be a lights out for everybody else behind them who has to close the gap. If they can get both Wout and Laporte into that front group, it's been a while since we've seen teams have two riders in the front group going into the base. I think the last time was maybe 2019, where Mohoric and Nibali were both there, but they didn't really work very well together. If they can actually get two people and capitalize on that, Laporte and Wout, I think that if one of them attacks, then there's the whole group two dynamic of the chase is disrupted by whoever's the teammate is who's behind, then all of a sudden that is such a deadly recipe for a win.
Yeah, I completely agree. We also spoke about Pogacar and UAE could potentially use Tim Wellens as a false, well, just fire him up the road and everyone's looking at Pogacar and then suddenly Wellens has a 30-second advantage. You never know. Yeah, but like the use of teammates could be quite interesting. Jumbo-Visma, they have number of riders that could be sent up the road, but equally, Ineos-Grenadiers, everyone's looking towards Pitcock potentially, but there's also Kwiatkowski who's won here before. And EF Education EasyPost, Magnus Cort Nielsen, he's a very good all-rounder and has a good sprint. And in the team, Miguel Honoré is a good puncher. You've got Alberto Bettiol. Also, they could throw riders up there and then just have Magnus Cort follow the wheels. Who knows what form he's on? But equally, you also mentioned another Dane, Mads Pedersen, who's been looking very strong as well. And then we've started like with not the fastest sprinter, and now we're going more towards the sprinter. And yeah, there's one team that we're going to be talking about a lot that are sending two sprinters.
Oh gosh. It's such an interesting addition just because of all the dynamics. I love the micro analysis of San Remo. I think that well, it just makes it so interesting. But yeah, it's hard to predict exactly what's going to take place with the sprinters because Pedersen, like you say, is in flying form. He looked really good. Really good at Paris-Nice, and I think that he has the capabilities of getting over this climb. Of course, whether he'll get over with Stuyven, considering that Stuyven hasn't looked the best, you know, it's difficult to say. But again, Stuyven, when he won, he actually hadn't had very good results that season. He came out of nowhere, so it's maybe harsh of me to write him off, actually. But Pedersen has the capabilities of somebody. We saw his punchiness at like the Étoile de Bessèges, for example. He's really good at these short efforts, especially the ones which aren't particularly steep in gradient, like the Poggio. He's perfectly suited towards this. And if he makes it in that front group, he's going to be a hard man to beat. Because I think Wout van Aert would be scared if he was there for sure. But I'm sure Wout van Aert would also be scared of some of the other sprinters, wouldn't he?
We haven't gone into detail, Matej Mohoric. And one of the reasons we haven't is this race hasn't been won by the previous winner. So it hasn't been defended by the defending winner since Erik Zabel in 2001. So he won the 2000
Whoa.
edition and then 2001. And I'm not sure if that was the edition where, no, because there was one where Óscar Ferreira, him and he celebrated too soon and Óscar Ferreira pipped it. We always love going back and looking at history and seeing the trends, but yeah, the odds are definitely not in Matej Mohoric's favor. Hence why Lotto Destiny skipping past
Yes.
Bahrain victorious, bringing Caleb Ewan, who we have had a discussion about what is happening with him. He had a bit of a rant on Twitter after he lost the race on the line, and then Arnaud Delys, who we've been praising so much this year, but didn't really deliver in Paris-Nice.
Drawing from Paris-Nice for Delys is difficult because I think that he didn't do well in the sprints because of poor positioning, not necessarily because of poor phys like his lack of form, basically. So I think that saying that he's not in good form because of some bad results at Paris-Nice perhaps is
Yeah, that's
jumping the
true.
gun. I think that it's going to be difficult considering that he's a debutant and he's like 20. He's probably never done a race of this distance before. Completely unknown, to be honest with you, as to what Dele's going to be doing here. I think it might be a bit of a far stretch, possibly, because Yeah, I can't remember the last person who probably won on debut. I honestly don't know. But
Oh,
I just
that's a good
think
one.
that I'd much favor Caleb Ewan's chances, to be honest with you. I think that it's possible they could both get over there because we saw again, Atuada Bessege is a great yardstick here. We saw that Dalí beat Pedersen on some of the punchier climbs, so clearly very capable. And Dalí looked sensational via Omloop Het Nieuwsblad despite crashing. Like, you have to remember, like, that form hasn't just disappeared out of nowhere. Like, he's still got it. Caleb Ewan is just a little bit more unknown again because he has done well in this race in the past. He's finished on the podium twice. If he can be up there, and if he can get up there with Dalí, then it's going to be really difficult for people to bring him back. Because if Dalí actually just, if they say, Dalí, you're working on the front, Caleb Ewan's sprinting, and they sort that out straight from the get-go, Ewan could win Milano San Remo. He absolutely could. It's going to be difficult to beat somebody like Pedersen if he's there, but I think that Ewan is a good chance for sure, so long as Lotto actually rally around him and don't go with some two-prong bullshit.
Right, as you said, debutants don't really win this race. Mark Cavendish won it back in 2009 as a debutant, but a rider who isn't a debutant, who we've talked about a lot on the Echelon on the channel, Mr. Biniam Girmay. Patrick, do you think he could do something? I mean, he fits the profile. We've spoken about the Sagan, him like this 22-year-old Sagan was all over this race, almost won it as well, but yeah, messed it up as well. Lost it to Trulick, which I think he should have won that edition. But yeah, do you think Binny could be in the mix here?
Yeah, absolutely. Binny's always in the mix in races like this. We saw him in lots of stages at the Giro, which was similar to this. And I think that he should be up there. Whether he wins is difficult because if he's there, then the other sprinters are there, like Pedersen, like Ewan, more than likely. So is he faster than those guys? No, I don't think he is. To just put it bluntly, I don't think he is. So could he still win? Yes, he could. If he was to get into that front group and then a counter move was to split off from that on the Via Roma in the last 2 kilometers, say him, Pogačar, and Christoph Laporte, for example, Binny could win that because he beat Laporte in Gent-Wevelgem last year, and he'd probably beat Pogačar. So Binny still has a chance. He just needs things to go his way. But I just think if it's a pure bun sprint phase, that's probably not going to be the best way for him to try and win this race.
So yeah, now coming to our favorite part of the show, we've discussed plenty of favorites, and I'm sure in the comments there's going to be even more names. But Patrick, first of all, who's your top three? But how does Milan San Remo 2023 get one?
I think that how it's going to be won is there's going to be a group that goes over the top of the Poggio, which is going to be about kind of similar to 2019, I think, that kind of size, maybe like 5 to 10 riders. And I think that somebody is going to solo attack on the Via Roma in like the last 2 kilometers, kind of similar to Jasper Stuyven, but maybe a few hundred meters later. And then it's going to be a solo victor again for the third year in a row. And then there'll be a bunch kick behind between the remaining people in that group. So my top three is going to be in third place. I'm going to go with Wout van Aert. Second place will be Mats Pedersen. And the person who's going to ping it off the front is going to be Tadej Pogačar. But racing instinct, I just
Fair
think that
enough.
he's got, he'll look around and he'll be like, I'm not faster than these guys. I need to try something. And he's going to go full send. Everybody's going to look around for a few seconds and that'll give him enough time. Give him a yard and he'll take a mile.
No Yorkshireman. But
No, like, see?
actually, I have the two of your podium as well, different order. I think it's going to be a strong group. They can't really get rid of anyone on the Poggio, and they come with a 15, 20-man group. And then the third place rider is going to be Mats Pedersen. Second place is Wout van Aert. And first rider to win on debut for a long time, Arnaud
Oh
Dely,
my
when he's a
God.
20-year-old. And Caleb Ewan is going to
Whoa.
be really annoyed.
Caleb Ewan will finish in fifth place. Like, we're supposed to be working for me?
Oh my goodness.
Imagine.
But anyways, that's it for this preview. We will be live on the Cycling Dane, of course, with this stream. Make sure to check out Aldo Cycling as well, Patrick's channel. He's very close to 1,000, so please help him out with that. And of course, as always, check out the Echelon Cycling Podcast. Comment down below who you think is going to win. And as always, thank you for watching and have a nice day.